You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Memorial Day. This is the American Hour, and I am Commander Tom Garcia, and I have with me my lovely co-host on this wonderful Memorial Day, Paula Lozon Osman. How are you doing today, Paula?
Doing excellent today, Tom. 83 and cloudy up here in Boston, but it's still hazy, hot, and humid. I think
You know, it sounds like about down here. It's a little hotter than 83, but I remember when I was living in New Hampshire, and I said to Nancy, you know what, in the summertime, it's just as hot here as down in Florida. We might as well just go move down to Florida. And being, you know, an airline pilot, that's the kind of thing I can do. So that's what we did.
Good for you.
Yeah, we've been very happy, very, very happy down here. But in any case, Memorial Day, everybody out there thinking about the purpose of Memorial Day. We've talked about it before last week, but let's quickly run over what Memorial Day is. Memorial Day is a federal holiday, and it's observed the last Monday of May. It originally was known as Decoration Day, which was the first recorded Decoration Day. Now we'll just start referring to it as Memorial Day, but was observed by the freedmen. They were the freed enslaved Southern blacks in Charleston, South Carolina in 1865 at the Washington Racecourse to remember the fallen Union soldiers of the Civil War. So today, we use it to commemorate all U.S. service members who died while in military service. Now, I like to throw one other thing in there, and that's the real purpose of Memorial Day. But I also like to, and we tend to do this, I think, as a nation, also think about our service members. And I think the reason we do that is because our active duty and active serving service members is because they have taken an oath. They have taken an oath that they are willing to give the ultimate sacrifice. And I'm going to read an interesting little story at the end of this that was put out by Andy Rooney, several years ago. And it's just a little story about, entitled, A Memorial Day Worth Remembering. And we will have the last portion of the show joining us a special war hero that fought in Vietnam, was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, and you got to stick around the show to find out who it is, but this gentleman is one of my favorite heroes of all time, so you don't want to miss it. All right, let's see, what else? Oh, we got Joe Goldner that's going to be coming on the show in a few minutes, and Joe Goldner is running for Florida's U.S. Congressional 20th District, and I think we all know, because we've tried to make it clear since a few weeks ago, that that district is currently chaired, or I guess the incumbent, you'd say, is Debbie What's-Her-Name Schultz, or actually Wasserman Schultz, but we like to call her What's-Her-Name Schultz, because we poke a little fun at her. And we really don't like Debbie too much, because she's abrasive, and she just doesn't seem like the kind of person that would, you know, well represent a district, certainly not that district. And I want to read a little lead in here. Paula's done some digging up on Debbie What's-Her-Name Schultz to find out a little bit more about her. But back on the 4th of May, and I need to make this, you know, clear so that everybody knows. She's not only a sitting congresswoman and is running again to retain that seat, she is the chairperson for the Democrat National Committee. Now, if somebody in the Republican Party wanted to do those two things, I would say no. You either do one or the other, because we need you doing your job and doing it right. And as many people have told me that live down in that district, well, she doesn't do her congresswoman job right. She's definitely not going to be able to do the DNC job right. Well, that's good for us conservatives. Whether you be independent or Republican, that's very good for us. She's taken on more than she can chew. She probably thinks she can, but she's not going to do a very good job of it. Perfect. Perfect choice for DNC chair. So in any case, back on May 4th, she said this about the Bible's ninth commandment, which is, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And in this political briefing that she was giving, she asked her fellow Democrats to pledge they would let no man or woman bear false witness against a Democrat. So here she has politicized the Ten Commandments. And, you know, she probably doesn't well, a lot of Democrats aren't very religious, and they really like to ignore the tenets of their own religion, but until it suits them. So here she is basically saying, any of those nasty old Republicans that are lying about us, don't let them get away with it. Don't let them get away with it. Okay, so apparently she's somebody that really doesn't tolerate liars. So before I hand it over to you, Paul, I got one other thing to read about Debbie. Because remember, she doesn't tolerate liars, and especially if you're lying about a Democrat. Especially if you're lying about a Democrat. Well, here a few weeks ago, she said that the Republicans not backing the president's auto bailout suggested they'd have Americans driving foreign cars. Here's what she said. If it were up to the candidates for president on the Republican side, we'd be driving foreign cars. They would have let the auto industry in America go down the tubes. Now, according to Florida Motor Vehicle Records, she drives owns a 2010 Infiniti FX35, Japanese car made by the parent company Nissan. Okay, and some of the comments on this. I just want to read some of the comments that people wrote after this story. So she's pointing the finger at Republicans for, one, not only letting the car companies go under. They would have let the car companies go under, but then that would have forced us against our will to then have to drive foreign cars. Obviously, Debbie likes domestic cars and wants to support the domestic auto industry, except she doesn't drive one. Now, here are a couple of the comments. No surprise here. This lady is foremost among the goose v. gander crowd. Watch her. Listen carefully. Next post. Do you think she's – I thought this was funny, Paul. Do you think she is smart enough to tell the difference between a domestic and a foreign car? Maybe she doesn't even know that she's driving a foreign car. What do you think about that one?
I probably doesn't.
maybe that's the problem. Let's see. Here's another good one. It's, I am personally embarrassed by DWS. Why can't she just keep her mouth shut and collect my money? Okay. She's somebody that doesn't like liars or people lying about Democrats. So, Paula, take it away on what Debbie's latest big thing is that she's saying in public that is absolutely untrue.
Before I do that, Tom, could I just I want to put a thank you out to my godson's father, Daniel Messier, and his crewmates that serve on the USS Providence. They are home, and they are with their families for the next couple of weeks. I want to thank them for serving their country. I want to thank you. I want to thank Dick Barenbeck, and I want to thank Joe Goldner as well and anyone else that served the country. It is truly appreciated. Getting into Miss Wasserman Schultz, Republicans are waging a war on women. It's just so hard for me to grasp how they could be so anti-women as they are. She added that the pushback on the guttural reaction from women against the Republicans' agenda out of the gate, the war on women that the Republicans have been waging since they took over the House, I think is going to not only restore but possibly help to succeed the president's margin of victory in the next election. The basis for her comments, she said, GOP Medicare overhaul plans, a push to defund Planned Parenthood, and economic proposals. If you look on balance at the entire record, their record is anti-women. Their record is a war on women, and it's a priority for them, is what she said.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. What else is going on in here?
Well, your perspective as a woman, what do you think about the Republican Party?
What do I think about the Republican Party? Ah.
In terms of, according to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, their assault, their all-out war on women.
See, I don't think she's got her facts straight. That's,
yeah.
That's my take. And see, I'll be honest with you, I'm still in the learning process of this whole thing, you know,
yeah.
Because I don't go too much to the left or to the right. I'm, like, in the middle. But
right. When
people start saying to me ignorant things like that,
yeah.
That's
exactly.
You
notice this, Paula, there's no substance in what she had to say. She's throwing accusations around left and right with no actual data or information to back it up. It's just all – and that's how the Democrats operate. If they say something often enough and keep saying it, They hope people will start believing it. And that's what she's going to do. And this is just a taste of what this abrasive woman is going to be doing as the chair of the Democrat National Party. And that's good. That's good, because people are going to look at her and go, geez, this is the face of the Democrat Party? Ugh. For a couple of reasons.
I watched her yesterday on, Face the Nation, I think, with, I don't even have his name in front of me, and I apologize. I watched her, and she was being asked questions, and it sounded like she was trying to skirt or run away from a couple of things, because she just couldn't come up with facts to back up whatever was being presented to her as far as, you know, Medicare and what was going on in the state of Florida in general.
Yeah. She has no substance. She can't back things up. It's always accusations. It's just throw out the accusations and hope people believe them. Hope some of them stick.
And I think I'm going to find, as time goes on, I mean, not to throw her under the bus or anything, but what I'm going to find as time goes on is, as I listen to what she has to say, she's still going to dig herself deeper and deeper in a hole, and it's going to hurt her more than it's going to help her out in the long run.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
There you go. Well, I would like to know how many women did we have running in the last presidential race? Let's see, Hillary Clinton, yeah, okay. And we had Sarah Palin as actually made it onto the ticket as vice president. And how about this time around? We've got Michelle Bachmann, looks like she may run, maybe Sarah Palin, but maybe not. Maybe she's going to run for the Senate in Arizona. And there's, you know, I've listened to some other shows where they list a whole host of women that are very prominent. And I sent you an email last night. Some of the groups, like the Space Coast Patriots and other groups like that, that were initial sort of Tea Party type groups that got started, were started all by women. And they're still being run by women, like the Spruce Creek Patriots, started by Moretti Hanover. And she is still running that one. So it's not to say that women are the only ones, but we had Kelly Townsend of the Greater Phoenix Tea Party Patriots on, about a month ago. And then we had Kathleen McKinley on the show, who is heavily involved in some different groups like that. She may not be the leader of one of those groups, but she's pretty well known in the Houston area. And there's a reason I had those women on, because they're strong women. They truly do represent the Republican Party and the best parts of the Republican Party, quite honestly.
Right.
And more than just the Republican Party, but the conservative movement. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz is absolutely wrong. She has nothing to back up her facts. And in fact, I know, because I scour across the country looking at a lot of these different groups, like Tea Party Nation. That is one of the largest groups in the entire country, and it's headed up by women. And it's got a huge following. And I'm not talking women. It's, you know, it's a mix of everybody, but it's headed up by women. The staff are made up, and they have some other people on the staff. But the woman who founded it, started it, and is still president of that organization is a woman. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, those are facts right there. She can't cite any facts because she doesn't have them. And she's going to continue to lie to the American people for the next year and a half as we go through this election cycle. And, yes, you're right, Paul. You're going to see her do more and more of this. And that's good for us conservatives. That's good, because it's going to highlight how mean-spirited and abrasive they are, and how they say one thing, but they do something else. So,
I mean, Geraldine Ferraro, I don't know what your feelings are about her, but she had jumped on the ticket way back in the day, if I understand correctly, and that led to, you know, Hillary jumping on the ticket and then Palin jumping on. And as time goes on, it's really good to see more women, you know, can stand up and throw their heads up and their shoulders back and go, you know what, I'm jumping on, I'm going to, you know, make myself known and my case heard, and I want to get on the ticket and run for president and vice president. I think it's about time. I was impressed to see that there were, four or five other women that said, hey, I want to do it. And, you know, no bones about it. They're going to jump in there and they're going to do what they have to do, you know?
Yeah. Well, I actually saw my congresswoman yesterday at the Air Museum, where we were celebrating Memorial Day weekend. And, of course, if you listened to the show, you knew that I was going to be there both days, Saturday and Sunday, in my flight suit. And I didn't tell you this yet, Paula, but the what? What'd you say?
Flight suit?
I was in my flight suit, yeah. I fit in my flight suit. So, in any case, I was there, and she came by, because she's making the rounds. So here it is, Memorial Day weekend. she's not sitting at home, you know, like Debbie Wasserman Schultz is, not doing anything. She's out meeting her constituents. I guarantee you Debbie didn't meet any constituents this weekend. She might have gone to some events, but she didn't get out and meet her constituents, and that's what Sandy Adams was doing and got to talk with her. So there's a strong conservative congresswoman, and we have many of them throughout the country, but she's just one example of that. And I asked her about, you know, Debbie's comments, and she said, what a, you know, bunch of baloney. I'm just making these words up because I don't remember precisely what she said, but it is a bunch of baloney and not to be paid attention to. So in any case, without any further ado, let's bring Joe Goldner on. He's with us. He's running for Congress in Florida's District 20, and we want to see Debbie Wasserman Schultz gone, and Joe is going to take his best shot at it. How are you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing great. First of all, I'd like to say good afternoon to everybody. Happy Memorial Day. Don't forget men and women that gave their lives for our freedom so we could talk like this today. And unfortunately, people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz can get away with what she does. You forgot one other woman, by the way. That's a big Tea Party leader down here in South Florida, Danita Kilcullen. She's the head of the Tea Party Fort Lauderdale area.
Uh-huh.
Tea Party.
Good.
Those are the years. And that's a big one because she helped get Alan West elected.
Yeah, she was actually very instrumental in rallying the troops and getting things going and making things happen to get him elected so we could get rid of Mr. Klein. That was a good one to get rid of.
That's exactly right. And Alan West is one of my people. I like to think myself similar to him in a lot of ways and staying on my principles and not wavering to any political gains. He's a man that's taking the heat in such a short time. And sticking with his principles. In fact, he even voted against the Patriot Act because he thought it would go too far.
Yeah. Well, let's let everybody know how they can connect with you, Joe. Where can they go to find out more about your campaign? And, of course, people need to understand that contributions are always welcome and needed, even if it's a small – it doesn't matter. We need to get rid of Debbie, and contributions are important. So how can they connect with you and help you out?
Go to the website at Joe Goldner. For Congress, 2012.com, and it'll say either volunteer or contribute. Of course, we need volunteers, but more importantly, with Debbie, we need money. It's very important to raise enough funds to beat the war machine that Debbie's got. And I call her the queen of scare. She loves to use scare tactics. She did last year. She's doing it again this year.
Yeah, you're right. That's what she does. Scare tactics via deception. Okay, so that's how they can find out more about you. Now tell the people about yourself so that they have an understanding of what your background is, where you've come from, how you got to where you are.
Okay, I'm 56 years old. I'm a father, a child, married to a great woman named Gail. My son is 12 years old. He's very good. He's going to get a special award next week in school. Everybody's happy about that. Myself, I'm pretty much a businessman. I work for a company that does a lot of fundraising for many different organizations out there. I'm a professional fundraiser, licensed and bonded. I'm involved with veterans groups, police groups, PAL, different type of organizations out there. My background is basically in marketing. I reach out to different people involved with groups like American Noble Cause, American Legion, and other stuff to make sure that there's no homeless threats. Before that, I was involved with other issues, also with marketing, different campaigns. I helped out Rudy Giuliani's campaign, helped out with George Pataki's campaign, did George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, and so forth. So now it's my turn to go out there and run because being that I'm a fundraiser, I'm able to talk to different people, both businesses and residential around the country, around the district. I've been doing that for 7 years. I got the pulse and the feelings of individuals. I know what they want, what they need, and I'm going to try and get that way done for them.
All right. Awesome. Well, I'm going to bring one other friend of ours on here. It's your half hour here, Joe, but I know Dick always comes up with good questions. Our good friend Dick Bierenbach is on here. He was an Army veteran, and in fact, I just saw him and had dinner with you this weekend and your lovely wife, Ann. How are you doing today, Dick?
Doing good, Todd. Can you hear me now?
Yes, got you loud and clear. Just wanted to bring you on in case you had a good question to ask Joe as we get going through this. But here's a question that a lot of candidates get asked. You know, I ran for Congress once, Joe, and I got asked this all the time. Mm-hmm. And so it's worth kind of coming up with an answer. And sometimes you got time to give a long answer, you got time to give a short answer. You got plenty of time here, so tell us what you want. But why should people in District 20, Florida, vote for you? Why should they vote for you in the primary to put you up against Debbie What's-Her-Name Schultz?
First of all, I'm not tied to any lobby groups or anything else. I'm one of them. I ride buses during the week. I'm the type of person that actually goes out and understands them, talk to the people. I've been in the neighborhoods for the last several years. I'm one of the top organizers of the Tea Party movement. I was organized the Sunrise Tea Party, and I know what the people, they come to me and they tell me what they need and want, and I'm willing to roll up my sleeves and actually fight for the people and actually do what's necessary to get things done without any lobby groups on my head tail or anyone influencing or changing my ethics or anything like that or my political beliefs. I will stay and stand packed to my principles, morals, and values, and work hard for my constituents and not leave or go to another job and I'll get 50-50 like Debbie Wasserman Schultz did.
Yeah.
That will never come true. If I can't be for the people and work hard for the people that I represent, I will not do this. And
okay.
If I have the opportunity, I will guarantee you and pledge to you that I will give my whole life and my being to the district.
Excellent. Well, now, pick up.
Joe, can I ask
a whole
you a couple questions?
Go ahead, Dick.
Go ahead.
I don't want to embarrass you. I like to find out what the candidates stand for and if they do believe in what politicians should stand for. What do you know about Agenda 21?
The one thing I do know about Agenda 21 is that it's supposed to be, they're trying to pretty much dictate what we're doing and everything is, and we have no say in it, and that's basically what I heard. That's more of a state issue than a congressional issue, and I'm against Agenda 21. Because we start losing more of our freedoms. I mean,
well,
we already lost
really
a lot with our Patriot Act.
Yeah. It's not really a state issue. I've been working with Agenda 21 for some time, and
yeah,
I've got
ahead.
Some people that are very, very knowledgeable in it. Agenda 21 is coming through the United Nations and through the Federal Reserve Bank. That's the bank, Federal Reserve Bank is not federal. That is a lousy name to call it. It's a bunch of rich old bankers that are taking us to the cleaners. However, the UN is federal, and that is where Agenda 21 is coming from.
I know they're trying to do it to Broward County, and there's a big fight going on with that.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that not many people know about, and it's initiated by the United Nations, but it's the whole concept is to create this global, you know, government. And, of course, sure, if you were somebody that had no real power and you thought you could sway some governments into joining in on this Marxist scheme, that's what I'm going to call this Marxist scheme, because ultimately that's
it is
what
a Marxist is. Scheme.
A Marxist scheme. Then, and you could, you know, subtly get the U.S. to kind of buy off on a little more. So it is something that, I mean, if you just Google it, you can come up with all kinds of good articles, and one of the articles I like is in the American Thinker. It just came out, guess what, today, the UN Agenda 21 coming to a neighborhood near you. I take it back. It didn't come out today. I'm reading the wrong date. It came out back in 2009. But there's lots of information out there, so I'd tell people go take a look at it and see what – but here's what I was thinking would be good to learn more about, Joe, is, Joe, there's a lot of different issues out there right now that are really important to Americans and probably important to folks in District 24, whether it be the use of our military, the economy, the debt. Pick any one of those and tell us where you stand on that and why it's important to the people in your district.
Okay, one, debt is important in some areas. The debt's important because how much spending are we going to spend? We got to stop the spending. Right now, Tuesday evening, they're going to vote, the House is going to vote on raising debt ceiling. They're not going to pass it unless they get If they raise it, say, $3 trillion, then they have to get $3 trillion in cuts. Otherwise, they're not going to pass any raising of the debt ceiling, and I agree with that. Yeah. If you're not going to get an open, or what they call a plain bill, on the debt, just raising the debt ceiling without any concessions, that will never happen. I'm against raising the debt ceiling. We need to reel in our spending, cut the spending like any other household. If we don't have the money, why spend it?
Right.
We have to learn how to budget ourselves. What's very big is Israel and foreign policy. District 20 has a large Jewish community in it, between what's in West Broward and then down towards South Beach and Miami Beach. And we need to tell the Jewish community that we're standing packed with Israel and we do not support going back to the pre-67 borders. That will kill or destroy Israel because it's being indefensible for them. And three, Medicare and Social Security. Seniors are very, very big in District 20. Between the Jewish community and seniors, it's almost half alone, just those two. And we got to make sure that the seniors understand that their Medicare, as we know it right now, won't be touched. Ryan's plan, which I support, does not go into effect for 10 years. So you got a 10-year learning curve, number one. Two, we got to articulate better for the seniors and the people in the constituents and the rest of the country to understand it better. And three, Ryan's plan will not work unless we get rid of Obamacare, because in order to get the people to buy the insurance companies at the insurance at the lowest possible price with the best policy that's geared to them or their family, you've got to go across state lines. The only way to do that is to get rid of Obamacare and also to restore $560 billion that Debbie Wasserman Schultz cut out of Medicare.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it, that the Democrats like Debbie Wasserman Schultz cut over $1 trillion from Granny's health Medicare program, but Paul Ryan's restores that. Somehow that's thrown Granny off a cliff, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz, oh, she's saving Granny. This is, again, the tactics that the Democrats are going to use, and people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, they're going to lie. They're going to lie to the American people. They're going to say that Paul Ryan is going to hurt seniors when, in fact, they have already hurt seniors with Obamacare. They've already done it. They've already thrown Granny under the bus.
And CD26 up in New York, she did not have a handle that commercial, and that's what did her in.
Yeah.
All she had to do was, this is what I would have done, and now it's very important, to counteract that commercial, is repeat that commercial instead of using Paul Ryan actor, use Obama as an actor for Obama and the Democrat that's running over there, and have them push Granny over the cliff with the caption, Granny already went over the cliff thanks to Obamacare, $560 billion that was cut and eliminating of Medicare Advantage. That would have counteracted that commercial. And you'll see that commercial pull out, and the Republican candidate would have won.
Yeah. I think I came up with something similar to that, Joe, last week. I said Paul Ryan should come walking up to a wheelchair and say, hey, where's Granny? And standing there on either side of the wheelchair would be Little Red Riding Hood and the Big Bad Wolf. And he would say, where's Granny? And they'd say, the Democrats threw over a cliff. And then the Big Bad Wolf will just shake his head and go, man, that, it could be Debbie Wasserman Schultz, or he could just say the Democrats, they're meaner than me. So, yeah, something like that. You're absolutely right. That's the kind of we got to counterpunch with these type of – and anybody watching this go like, well, wait a minute. They just said Paul Ryan's throwing Granny over the cliff, but now Republicans are saying that the Democrats already did it. And then if anybody doesn't know this already, just go get online or ask your neighbor or whatever. How did the Democrats already throw Granny under the bus? Well, they took $500 trillion out of Medicare over the next 10 years. Oh, my goodness. But the Republicans restore that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the kind of tactics we're going to have to use. And those are the kind of tactics that Debbie uses. I was going to – let's see. There was something you were talking about in the beginning. I wanted to ask you about that. Oh, with the debt. Let me ask you this. If you were in Congress today, and I'm asking this question because there's some Republicans that are one way and some the other way on this issue, but if you were in Congress today, would you vote against any raising of the debt ceiling regardless of whatever cuts are made? Or do you think a balance of cuts, like you just said, that they're proposing right now would be acceptable? As long as we cut spending by $3 trillion, we can raise the debt ceiling by $3 trillion or whatever it is. Where would you stand on that, those two issues?
I'm against raising the debt ceiling because we've got to stop the spending. But if we can get concessions in writing and set up right that coincides with the raising the debt, that may be the deal to come out at the end.
Yeah. Well,
but
that's
as a plain, just open raising debt, I'm against it. I would vote against it. I would vote against raising debt unless there's something major comes out of it. Otherwise, I'll be voting against raising the debt.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll see what happens, how many Republicans vote against it, regardless of what it cuts. I know there are some Republicans that are saying they don't care what cuts are made. In fact, what they're saying is we need to cut the government anyway and not raise the debt ceiling. But, you know, we got the Democrats going, oh, boo-hoo, we can't, you know, pay our bills if we do that. Yeah, we can get rid of your government.
Nothing's going to happen. If we just let the debt ceiling, you know, just go not raise the debt, nothing really is going to happen except some of the waste will be cut forcibly.
Yes, you got it. We would have to. It's just like, as you said, anybody in their own home, if all of a sudden you realized you're out of money for the month, then you don't spend money, you know. You get some food out of the cabinet, this, you know, some of the canned goods and other things, and that's what you're going to live on for the rest of the month. And, you know, maybe you have to carpool and do some other things.
Use some of the hurricane stuff that we have every year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I want to just throw this out here real quickly. I get asked this a lot by people. Because I talk a lot about the climate and that kind of thing, but all these tornadoes have absolutely nothing to do with global warming. Tornadoes, and most people don't know this, tornadoes are cold storm centers. It's actually La Nina that has caused this, the different ocean pattern that brings a little bit more cool air than normal down from Canada. It's cool air. It has nothing to do with global warming, and global warming has nothing to do with, if there was even anything, nothing to do with La Nina or El Nino. Those are wind patterns, sea patterns that have been around for a long time, forever, yeah. And they just occur naturally, and we don't know why. Yeah. So anyway, I just want to throw it out. But I do also want to say that we are very concerned about, and it looks like the communities are pulling together, but our prayers and thoughts are with the families that have been hit by these hurricanes and lost loved ones and now have, you know, everything gone and that kind of thing. So it is Memorial Day, and I know that the tornadoes are a little old news, but those people are still hurting. So keep them in your thoughts and prayers,
folks.
They
need our prayers. They need our prayers and our help. And as Americans, we all come together and desperate times to help each other, and that's one that makes our country great.
Yeah. Now, is there, Joe, something that's particularly special to District 20 that may not be as important to voters in other districts in Florida?
District 20 is unique in a lot of ways. The way it's set up right now, we have, because of districting and now next year with the redistricting, we have all kinds of cultures. We got a little bit of free Cuba, Spanish, Latin, little Cubans in there, and a few Cubans, and we got to make sure that they get their representation. We have the gay community in there, Wilton Manors, and some of South Beach, and they need to be represented. So we have a mix. It's like a melting pot, similar to New York City in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so a person out of New York, I kind of know what's there and how to work with them and being together and everything. It's the same thing. I used to live in the village at one time. And so I could actually get hands on everything and work for that way. It's unique that it is a melting pot. You got young people, old people, everything working together. And it's a growing area. It got many different cities in different counties because it's splintered too. But one thing unique about it is only a 2-county district, as opposed to, say, District 23, where it's 5 counties. But, it's a total mixture. You got entrepreneurs, you got big business, small businesses. We actually have the Florida Panthers hockey team in the district, Sawgrass Mills. So it's unique in a lot of ways.
Okay. And let's see. Now, I know this is not a federal issue, but, you know, it's been in the news. The governor cut quite a bit out of the budget. I don't know if you know it. You probably wouldn't. Most people wouldn't. But there was $12 million in the budget for a homeless veteran program that he cut. And, you know, don't know whether he understood what it was really about or not, but he went through line item of like 205 items. To me, that seems like if there's that many items in the budget, you ought to just veto the whole thing, let the legislature know what you're against. But in any case, what do you think, how would you rate Rick Scott on his performance up to this point as governor?
Fair at the moment. He did a few things that we're not happy about. I'm not happy about cutting out the monies out of the homeless veterans, considering that I've worked with a group, and one of the original people involved with American Noble Cause, which was geared to homeless veterans. That was a mistake. We always should take care of the ones that work the hardest to defend our country and pay the ultimate price in some cases. And we always, and their families, that's important. Education budget was cut maybe a little too much. Working with Sherry Kress and her group and trying to rebuild the education system in Broward County and the rest of the state. And his cuts maybe a little too far on that. So, Al Mark, I know what he's trying to do. Give him an A for that. He cut the wrong areas in some cases, and that brings it down to fair, like a C.
Yeah. Okay. All right. How do you think the Republicans are doing in Congress right now?
Okay. The House Republicans are doing great. I give them an A. Paul Ryan, Alan West, and all those, they're doing great. They're sticking to the guns. They're not wavering, and I'm going to be the type of person like them. The Senate Republicans here and there, if McConnell stays and sticks to his guns, then he'll get a good rating. I'm not so sure. Scott Brown, throw him out to sea. He's becoming more of a rhino. We got to keep away from the rhinos. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yes.
Hello. Yes.
Hi, you still there?
Hello? Hi, I'm here.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. So, like I said, Scott Brown. He's more of a rhino. We got to keep away from the rhinos. We got to stay with people that's going to be staying to the principles, that's following the conservative message, that's going to be there for the Constitution and for the people. And not differ to party lines.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty much it.
Well,
did we lose connection for a minute?
No. I had to turn my microphone off for just a second while I was chatting with somebody else, but we're
okay.
A-okay.
Right.
We're getting close to the end of our time, and so I'm going to let you wrap it up with whatever you want to tell folks there, Joe. Again, how do they find you on the internet, connect with you, and let them know what you would like the voters of Florida 20 to know in order to get you elected?
Okay. First of all, my website is joegoldnerforcongress2012.com. Go to the site, volunteer, get the message out. More importantly, donate because it takes money to beat W. Wasserman Schultz. Now, as far as the district, I want everyone to know in the district that I'm out there working hard for you. I want to be the best congressman. I love to be part of the spinning image of Alan West. He's always out there, gung-ho, and that's who I prime myself after. I know how he thinks and feels, and I'm similar in that way to him. I got that passion in me. Now, I got my sleeves rolled up, getting into the ditches, and be fighting for all my constituents, not any one group, and to get the things needed and things done that you want. And I'll be there listening to you. I'll have my town hall meetings. I'll be talking to you every single time I get a chance, 2, 3, 4 times a month if I have to do town hall meetings, similar to what Alan West is doing. That's the way I'm going, and that's the way I'll be. And I'm not W. Wasserman Schultz that goes on TV and do other things and never talks to the district. I'm there for you. You're the boss. The people in my district are the boss, and I'm working for them, and I will represent them.
Excellent. All right, Joe. Well, we appreciate you coming on, especially on this Memorial Day weekend, and we wish you all the best. We'll have you back, you know, later on when things heat up. If you want to talk about what's going on in the race, you know, later on in the year when things, they will heat up, I guarantee you, in the fall. And then by Christmas time, boy, it's going to be moving fast. So in any case,
that's
good
true,
luck again.
That's true.
Thanks for coming on the show, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for allowing me on the show. And let's go get Debbie Wasserman Schultz because we got to put her out to pasture.
Excellent.
Me too. Right.
There you go.
Thanks.
Thank you, Paula. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right. Well, there we have it. Another candidate going to try and take on Debbie Wasserman. And I'm going to do what I can throughout the year to help out candidates and get their message out, et cetera, so that the voters are more informed and can get a good candidate in the primary, and then it'll really be important to get that candidate elected and beat Debbie. So things really heat up after the primary. But and it can be I tell you what, it can be a long haul to get to that primary, and then when it's over, now the real fighting begins. Oh, man. So anyway, I'm going to read this Memorial Day article that was written by Andy Rooney back on the 25th of May, 2008. And I thought it was a good article. I like what he had to say. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but here we go. And he wrote it the day before Memorial Day. So he says, tomorrow's Memorial Day, the day we have set aside to honor by remembering all the Americans who have died fighting for the thing we like the most about our America, the freedom we have to live as we please. Liberty. Yes, that's great. Now that's my little commentary there. Anyway, no official day to remember is adequate for something like that. It's too formal. It gets to be just another day on the calendar. No one would know from Memorial Day that Richie M., who was shot through the forehead coming into Omaha Beach on June 6, 1944, wore different color socks on each foot because he thought it brought him good luck. No one would remember on Memorial Day that Eddie G. had promised to marry Julie W. the day after he got home from the war, but didn't marry Julie because he never came home. For too many Americans, Memorial Day has become just another day off. There's only so much time any of us can spend remembering those we loved who have died. But the men, boys really, who died in our wars deserve at least a few moments of reflection during which we consider what they did for us. They died. We use the phrase gave their lives, but they didn't give their lives. Their lives were taken from them. There is more bravery at war than in peace, and it seems wrong that we have so often saved this virtue to use for our least noble activity, war. The goal of war is to cause death to other people. Because I was in the Army during World War II, I have more to remember on Memorial Day than most of you. I had good friends who were killed. And he talks about a few of his friends there, and one of them was a co-captain with him on the football team in high school. And here's what he said. I won't think of them any more tomorrow, Memorial Day, than I think of them any other day of my life. And I think that's true. I think about some of my friends that are gone now on Memorial Day, but I think about them throughout the year also, because things occur and things happen where you have a time to reflect or something catches your eye and it reminds you of somebody that you lost. And my thoughts are always pleasant thoughts. But now, here's what Andy had to say at the very end, and I think it's good. Remembering doesn't do the remembered any good, of course. It's for ourselves, the living. I wish we could dedicate Memorial Day not to the memory of those who have died at war, but to the idea of saving the lives of the young people who are going to die in the future if we don't find some new way that makes our war, that takes war out of our lives. And that would be a great thing. I'm also a big believer of making sure that we don't get into conflicts that are not necessary, and when we do get into conflicts, doing it the absolute most effective, efficient way to achieve the goal that has been put before the military, and then get out of there, or make the place safe that we've gone into. And we've seen too many wars where that has been not done. And the Vietnam War is a perfect example of that, a war of attrition. Attrition? I mean, we're going to see if we can outlast the enemy and make more of them die than us, but we're going to be dying, and it's just going to keep going on and on and on. Boy, I can't say bad enough things about our leaders back then during that time frame. And part of that is because my father served two tours in Vietnam, And I said at the beginning of the show, we're going to have a special Vietnam War hero come on the show, and we are going to have a special Vietnam War hero come on the show in a few moments, and that is my father. His name is, guess what, Tom Garcia. So, well, I may, actually, it looks like he just showed up. I see, recognize his phone number. Let's bring him on right now. Good afternoon, Tom Garcia Sr. How are you doing today? Welcome to the American Hour.
Pretty good up here in Brunswick, Maine, and I'm happy to be able on the show with you.
Excellent. Well, it's the first time you've been on the show, and it just occurred to me yesterday that you guys are relaxing in beautiful Brunswick, Maine. You just drove up there from Las Cruces, New Mexico the other day, or not in a day's time. You took your time, but you're there now and relaxing and getting settled in to your place there, and that's great. And I thought, gee, we're going to be broadcasting today on Memorial Day. I'm very lucky that you're still around, but you served for 20 years in the Air Force, and as I recall, when you were in the Air Force, and maybe even before you were in the Air Force, you did a little broadcasting of your own. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I went to Seton Hall University in South Orange, New Jersey, where I worked at the radio station on the air, WSOU-FM, South Orange. And while I was an aviation cadet down in Georgia, I got some airtime on a local station in Moultrie, Georgia. And when I was in California at Vandenberg Air Force Base, I was a member of the Toastmasters Club, and we had a program that we did once in a while in a on a radio station down there in Santa Maria, California. And probably my most interesting efforts along broadcast lines were at Goose Bay Labrador, where CFLA-TV, Channel 8, Goose Bay. I was the news anchor and did some special programs interviewing people, too. So it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And this is the first time I've been on the air in many, many years now.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great, and I failed to introduce you to my co-host. I have a co-host, and I think it works out great. Paula Lozon-Osman, I'd like to introduce you to my father, Tom Garcia.
Hello, how are you? It's a pleasure to meet you.
Hi, Paula. I'm doing fine, enjoying the cool weather up here in Maine.
Now, Paula's from Boston, and she said that it's cloudy, humid, and 83 there today. And I remember days like that when I was flying out of Boston. But it's a little hotter and humid, but sunny here. And you probably know about that because you were just looking at changing residences to Florida. But let's talk about some of your experiences in the military. And I don't want to put you on the spot, Dad, but if you have a story you'd like to tell about either my grandfather, Pal Reed, who served in World War I and World War II. I know that you've written some stories about him, but you're always writing stories. You've been almost sort of a kind of a, I don't want to say amateur because you write great stories, but that, you know, sort of an amateur historian, and I know that you have written for publications, so that's not really amateur, but sort of a hobbyist historian about the military. So I know you know a lot of stories. You've written lots. You've told lots. Maybe there's one in particular that you think would be applicable to Memorial Day?
Well, yes. You know, one of the things I did a lot of writing on, I'd go around to places, I'd be in McDonald's or someplace like that, and I'd see a person of the right age, and I'd just interview them on the spot. And the what I wanted to know, and I wrote a lot of these short stories down, where were you on December 7th, 1941. Uh-huh. And I got some great stories and a lot of memories. And that's never been published anywhere except everybody I interviewed got a copy of it after their story went into it. And it kept getting bigger and bigger and longer and longer. And terrific stories that I heard.
Wow.
Another one I did this first of all among my Air Force flying buddies, and then I started expanding to Army pilots, Navy pilots, And that question was, what airplane that you have never flown would you like to get a chance to fly? And, of course, I got some great stories there, too.
Uh-huh.
Over.
Yeah, okay. Now, tell us, I was just at an Airbird Museum, and I believe we had a UH-1 there at the Airbird Museum that has been restored. Is that the helicopter you flew in Vietnam?
Yes, I flew the UH-1 Huey.
Uh-huh. Okay. And what were some of the organizations and groups? You were in the Air Force, but you did some work with some other special organizations, like Special Forces and some of those groups. What were some of the groups that you worked with while you were there in Southeast Asia?
When we got there, we were looking for a job, and we worked on Project Market Garden, I think it was called, with the Navy. It was a coastal patrol thing. Then we did a few other things that I don't really recall very much about, but we got a bunch of new guys, and I was the head instructor pilot there. I recruited a few other very experienced helicopter pilots, and we started a training program, and then we hooked up with the 5th Special Forces. Their headquarters was right there where we were at Nha Trang on the coast, and we went up to a place called FOB2. That stands for Forward Operating Base Number 2 in CCC. Everything had letters and numbers. CCC was Command Control Central. We were up at a place called Kontum, which was near Pleiku. And I spent the rest of my tour working 100% for the 5th Special Forces Group, and we had a lot of interesting missions with them.
Okay. Can you tell us about one of those missions that was interesting?
They were all interesting. I can't think of any one in particular that was more interesting than the other.
I remember you telling me
and inserting Special Forces teams, which usually consisted of 2 Americans and about 6 Montagnards, who were also based where we were at Kontum. We would drop them off, and they would set up all kinds of listening posts, sabotage, booby traps, and things on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. More often than not, they got in trouble because there would only be maybe 8 of them, and hundreds of NVA coming down the trail heading toward South Vietnam. So that's where we had to go in and pull them out, emergency extraction, we called it, under harrowing circumstances. And that was pretty much what our mission was. Now, all these years later, one mission blends into the other in my memory, because they were so much alike.
Yeah. Well, I remember a few stories. You telling me a few stories, and I think this will jog your memory on one of them. You know, I envision these guys in black little ninja outfits that you'd drop in somewhere. Tell us how you would drop them into a tight landing zone. And there was one story I remember where you dropped them in so fast and got out, you'd actually dropped them right in the middle of a VC encampment, and they immediately, I mean, the Viet Cong were so shocked they didn't know what to do, and you guys were already gone by then, and these guys now are getting on the radio, you got to come get us, firefight breaks out, you call the SPAT. I'm already telling the story, but you know the story I'm telling you about? You remember that one?
Yes, I remember that very well.
Well, then let us
yeah.
have it, because I'm probably
we
distorting.
Right on the South Vietnam border.
Uh-huh.
And it just happened that a group was coming across right there on that hilltop, and we didn't see them. No, we didn't see them when we dropped our troops, but they landed right in the middle of it, and there was a big firefight, and our guys won because they were able to call us to come right back and get them, and they grabbed packs off of a dead VC and things went through some pockets and got some diaries and grabbed some weapons. And it was, even though it was the quickest mission we ever did, in many ways, it turned out to be very successful. And I'd like to say that a good friend of mine, Jerry Shriver, was one of the guys, one of the Special Forces guys on that mission, which on this Memorial Day, it makes me think of my good friends who went over and gave it all and didn't come back. And names that come to mind are Ed Palmgren, Ed Capelli, Bob Baldwin, and Jerry Shriver.
Wow. Now, can you tell us how you got into those landing zones? I realize for a pilot to try and describe flying in formation, do things, we have to use our hands as visual, but do your best to describe how you used to come across the treetops, what kind of formation you were in, and how you dropped those, were able to drop those guys in so quickly and get right out.
We went out there a few days ahead of time and reconnoitered the area. Found out we didn't want the bad guys to know where we were going to be coming in, so we covered a lot of territory and looked at a lot of potential landing zones, but only one of them was the one we were actually going to use. So we knew when we went back out there where we were going and which LZ, landing zone, we were going to use. And a fellow named Joe Brown and I worked together and came up with a plan, the high-low bird plan. I would be the low bird with the troops. Joe Brown would be the high bird. He'd be up maybe 1,500 feet. I was right down on the treetops. And when a Huey helicopter is coming at you, whop, 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 you can hear it if you're down in the jungle, but you don't know which way it's coming from. You don't know if it's going to pass over you, and it goes over you so quickly that you can hardly get it, they could hardly get a shot off at us. Anyway, Joe Brown is up in his Huey at 1,500 feet. I'm right down in the treetops, and Joe is giving me instructions. Things like left 5 degrees, right 6 degrees. Yeah, cutting it there at 1 degree. You're coming up on a little hill. You got to come up over that hill. There's a little valley. Dive down into that valley. I'll tell you when to go into your flare. A flare is pulling the nose way up high and slowing the helicopter way down. Your tail rotor is almost dragging in the trees. And he'd say, okay, flare now, flare now. You're 50 meters from the LZ. You're 25 meters out. You're right over it. Drop down in. And the bad guys didn't have a chance shooting at me. And Joe was up out of effective AK-47 range of 1,500 feet. So it really worked out well. We, probably other people invented that same thing, but nobody told us about it. We dreamed it up on our own, and it worked out very well.
Oh, good. Ah, well, that's the story I remember. All right. Now, we got somebody in our chat room that is first said, thanks to your father for his service to this country, and then he said, can you ask him what weapons you carried on the Huey?
Our guys carried, our special forces and mountain yards carried AK-47s, and there's a reason for that. When they're on the ground in a firefight, an AK-47 that they are shooting sounds just like an AK-47 that the North Vietnamese are shooting, and they can't zero in on you based on the sound of your weapon. So everybody used AK-47s. And I had a Car 15. A Car 15 is a carbine with a folding telescopic stock and a short barrel. It's based on the Colt M16, but it's a fully automatic, stubby, short carbine that we each carried. And the Air Force issues Smith & Wesson Combat Masterpieces, 38 caliber pistols. I didn't have that. I had a Colt 45, an Army Colt 45.
And where's that Colt 45 now?
I think you have it.
I do. I sure do. Yeah, that was a good firing gun. I haven't fired it in a long time, but one of these days I'll get back out on the range. And did you not also carry a shotgun at one time?
That was in Alaska when I had trouble in the woods with a bear after I crashed a helicopter out there in the mountains.
Okay.
And all I had, it wasn't even mine, it was my crew chief's 22 caliber automatic. Not much good against a bear.
Yeah.
I did shoot toward him a few times and scared him away. He was coming right toward me, the crashed helicopter. And then that's when I bought a sawed-off shotgun, and my son Dan, it's called a riot gun, actually.
Uh-huh.
And my son Dan has that now in Texas.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, he can use. He could probably use a riot gun in Texas where he lives. Anyway. All right. Let's see. Well, did you... You also had an M60 on the gunner, right? An M60 mounted in the Huey.
In the Schlicks, the ones that those of us who carried the troops, there were two M60s, in either door. Our gunships had Gatling guns that fired about 3,000 rounds a minute. You really used up the ammunition fast,
okay.
So you didn't. Use bursts that were too long, and they also had rocket pods, seven rockets on either side of forward firing on the gunship.
And then did you not on the Hueys have some of those little butterfly bomblets that you could strap on there or put on somehow? There weren't, you know.
No, we didn't. The Army did, but we didn't.
Okay. And those were
You're
like
probably
basically...
thinking of a butterfly bomb I used to have up on the mantle when we lived in Arizona.
Yes,
but that wasn't anything that I brought back with me. I got that after I got home as just sort of a souvenir.
Okay, excellent. Well, we are out of time. It's been fun. It's been an enjoyable day. We'll be back broadcasting tomorrow live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'd like to thank you, Dad, for coming on the show and sharing some of your stories and experience. Thank you for your service. Thank you for the fine example that you gave to me growing up and inspired me to go in the military, and I had a wonderful career. And tell Mom I said hi and that I love her.
I will, and thank you for your service, Tom. Goodbye.
All right. Take care, Dad. Bye.
That was
well,
nice.
That was fun having
hey,
my
Paul,
dad on the show.
Go Red Sox.
Go Red Sox. There you go. Thank you.
If you live in Maine, you've got to be a Red Sox fan.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, Paula, you want to give the final shout-out to our troops?
I give the final shout-out to our troops. Hoorah to Navy. We love you. We miss you. We want you home real soon. And it's just really good Memorial Day. And, again, I thank you, Tom, for your service. We all thank you.
Well, thank you. And we're going to try and do a service here with this show to the country and by trying to get people elected that are really going to serve and support and truly support the Constitution. You know, in the oath of office, everybody remembers that, you know, I swear to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Great. What most people forget, and I used to remind them about this on the campaign trail, is the next sentence says, and bear true faith and allegiance to the same. So lip service to the Constitution, trying to figure out ways to get around it, that doesn't sound like true faith and allegiance. And that's what our lawmakers need to remember. They swore an oath not only to defend it, but to bear true faith and allegiance to the same. That means you've got to believe in it, and you're going to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the oath they took. That's the oath I took. I've never broken my oath, and I never will. And Paula, have a great rest of the Memorial Day. Thanks for joining me today. We'll see you tomorrow on the show, same time, 4 o'clock. I'll be broadcasting from Brazil. You'll be broadcasting from Boston. Maybe we can flip that one day. Maybe you could go back to visit Brazil someday, and while you're there, you broadcast from there. I'll fly up to Boston and broadcast from there.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Everybody, have a great rest of the day. Thanks to our troops that are serving now, and thanks for those that gave the ultimate sacrifice. Good night.
Good night.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.